We wouldn't be able to keep this archive going without your support. Donate online today at wyxr.org.
7 FM, the station with the city's soul.
Good evening. You're listening to Talking Memphis right here on WYXR 91.7 FM Memphis. This week, we revisit the last 2022 stereo sessions presented by Mempho and Nexair. Jared Boyd sits down with Scott Bomar and Willie Halls as they explore the 1973 debut album of John Gary Williams.
How's everybody doing? Everybody good?
Oh, so good to be here for one last of this year's stereo session. How many of y'all have been to a stereo session already this season? Amazing, amazing. Call out your favorite record. Go ahead, call it out. Call it out. I'll be listening.
This one.
I heard all of them. Well, we want to thank all of our sponsors once again. And, you know, this series has been amazing. For me, as a Memphis music collector, as a DJ, as a program manager, as just a Memphian, to be able to gather with people. One, I mean, listen, that's a feat in itself in this day and age. But also, you know, we go and see Thor, and we go and see Elvis, and we go and see all these different things. But to sit with other people and listen to a record and to know that it was built and bred and cultivated from people in your community and to be able to have conversations around them, I mean, this is a unique experience like nothing else in the entire world. And I feel confident in that. And so Memphis has a rich and beautiful and illustrious music history that spans all sorts of styles, spans all genres. And when people talk about the Memphis sound, they talk about something that's very specific. And we love our Otis Reddings. We love our Al Greens. We love our Ann Peebles, our Carla Thomases, our Rufus Thomases, and our Elvises, and on and on and on. But there are so many cracks and crevices of Memphis music that don't get the appreciation, that don't get a close, keen eye. And so many of our neighbors who are here with us, who have passed on, who may be abroad, who may be other places, who may have not been in a studio for 40, 50 years, that deserve that tap on the shoulder or deserve just that recognition for someone to say, you know what, you did something that was significant to us, and we want to celebrate that. So can we clap it up for that? With that said, I had a couple guests. I thought I did. Where'd they go? Man, these dudes are so hard to wrangle. Scott Bomar? Is Scott Bomar in the house? Boom. Willie Hall. Is Willie Hall in the house? Wonderful. There's a curtain right there. I didn't realize it. Welcome, fellas. How y'all doing?
Good.
We're going to sit down. We're going to talk about music, if that's all right with y'all. I know, just for, hey, we do this. Since we're videotaping and stuff, I want to make sure everybody won't look good. We're here to talk about John Gary Williams, right?
What do you want to know?
Well, first, we said that we advertised this that Willie Hall would be here, but we also have a special guest. So we also have some other surprise guests. All of the Williams family, can y'all wave your hand, please? I think that this is the most phenomenal turnout for family members that we've had in all of our studio sessions. And I think that speaks to John Gary and his impact and his folk and his people. And it may speak to just the fact that we've been getting better at getting the word out. But, you know, y'all folk is my folk too now, just because I see some familiar faces and some people that, you know, we didn't know what we had people in common. And so that's really that overlap of that Memphis music story, and I truly appreciate that we can have that communion and community together, that fellowship. So I appreciate y'all so much for being here with us. Brother Willie Hall, you got where'd your microphone go? There it is.
So much going on.
Absolutely. When you think about John Gary Williams, and you think about the opportunity to be here tonight to celebrate him, I mean, let's just start there. What comes to mind?
You want to go first?
I want to hear from you, Brother Hart.
You know, I can talk.
That's what we're here to do. We're here to talk. We're going to listen, but we're here to talk, too.
Well, good evening, everybody. Thank you for coming. First of all, John and I were friends. I don't know where to start, man. I first met John in 1967, I think. No, 68. I had just joined the Barclays after that plane crash. And John was in the group, the Mad Lads. He impressed me as a young man. And I, at some point, wanted to be just like him. Not the horrible part, you know, the cool part. I wanted to be cool like him. And I always admired his music. As a young kid in high school, I would buy the songs by the Mad Lads. I thought John's voice was unique, and the group was just fantastic. So we didn't see each other for a few years, and later on, I came to him with a song idea, a couple of song ideas. I had the hook and the music, and John wrote the lyrics.
He and Tom Nixon, a producer for the Temprees, they had combined ideas, and Tom took him to Philadelphia and had the song recorded. So, but John and I were looking forward to making as much money as we could, but unfortunately, the week they were to release the album to start printing for distribution, the week they were going to distribute the album, Stax Records closed. So that was like the ship coming in and turning over, you know. So we never got the fair airplay or distribution that would have been necessary to promote this album to the status that it really was. It was a good album. And so later on, I heard that John was losing his voice and one thing led to another. But my memories of John, the last memories are at Scott Beaumar's studio a couple of years ago, maybe. It was the year I was in jail. You remember that, don't you?
Which time?
Believe it or not, the last time, I hope. You know, there was a, I don't mean to jump the subject, but my mother told me I talked too much. But look, during, and this is no brag or anything, I don't trip, but look, during the filming of the second Blues Brothers movie, there was a line in there where I said, I'm not going to jail, man. I think they were trying to get the band back together, and there were so many demerits that John and Danny had picked up till we were bound to go to jail. So anyway, my line was, I'm not going to jail. I'm not going back to jail, man. I'm not going. And actually, honestly, after we finished filming the second Blues Brothers movie, 3 days after I landed in Atlanta, I was in jail. Oh, God. So I had to call the production company because they were late sending out checks. So I had my man Friday. He called the production company. They had to send me some money to bail me out of jail. So it was also ironic, but it was really something. It was nothing detrimental, just, you know, small stuff. But when the last time I was truly with John, you know, riding with him, pick me up, all of that, he and Scott had just gotten me out of jail. And the day they got me out, we had a recording session, or the night they got me out. They got me out that night, which was too long. Why y'all wait so long? Anyway, so that next morning, I'm telling you, man, it's like a minute.
Nah, do your thing. Go ahead.
We forgot about that part of the story.
So the next morning was a recording session for John Gary. I think we were doing just two singles for what eventually turned out to be a vinyl release on John Gary Williams, which Scott Beaumar, I know he produced and engineered it. I don't know if he had writers or not, but that was the last time that John and I shared some time together, and that was a few years ago, and we had fun. John can be real nervous in the studio. He worked my nerves. He kind of got that, you know. But sometimes if you're the artist and the producer, you're looking so far ahead, you know, distribution, sound, and all of that, until it can make an artist in the studio be kind of, you know, kind of edgy, as they call it. And I hate working with those kind, but, you know, all kinds come. But it was at his complex the last time I saw John, and we worked together. I think took us about 6 or 7 hours to do those two tunes. And the people were here that were in charge of the movie and also the book that they wrote on John. So it was a good time. But I had also heard that about what he was facing futuristically, you know, with his illness, his cancer. And when they first told me, I didn't believe it. I said, oh, y'all kidding, man. John's too much man to do that to himself. But then I tried to understand how horrible it is, because I've had family members to die from that too. But I tried to realize how horrible it is for him to face and to put others through that, to put his family through that. And day after day after day, demise after, you know, it's, so I can understand him. And I thought he was, that was a manly thing to do, even though people have different meanings about, they feel differently about suicide. But I think it was a manly thing to do, because you got to think about where you're going, what you're facing, what they've told you, what do you expect? You know, that's a heavy burden. But in realism, he's facing pain and agony and disappointment. And you're looking over your life. If I could have, I would have. I wish I could. You know, so it's a heavy thing. But I loved him. I always will. And I'm glad to be a part of a discussion about my life with John Gary Williams, my buddy.
I first met John Gary through Willie and Willie Mitchell. And in 2004, Willie Hall, Skip Pitts, and the Bo Keys, we went to Royal Studios and made our first album, The Royal Sessions. And at that time, Willie had just moved back to Memphis from Atlanta. Skip Pitts had just moved back to Memphis from, was Skip in Atlanta too, Willie?
No,
or DC. DC. Yeah, Skip Pitts had moved back to Memphis recently. And so for, you know, Skip Pitts, Willie Hall, Ronnie Williams, you know, to be over at Royal Studios in South Memphis making a record, I mean, it was kind of like a family reunion over there. I mean, it was like, you know, Randy Stewart, John Gary. I mean, it's like all these, it was like a cast of characters coming in every day during that session. It was more of a family reunion than a recording session, really. But
well, you know, it was the same way at Arden during the recording of the soundtrack for Hustle and Flow.
Yes.
I mean, everybody that was somebody came through. And
Isaac came through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got we had that photo on the cover of Commercial Appeal some years ago. But anyway, in that front page photo, or the front entertainment section, there's a picture of all of us during the recording of the soundtrack for Hustle and Flow. That was our first Craig Brewer project, which came through Scott, and we were all glad to do it. I think we were in, I know I left the studio after 17 hours. It was either 12, 15, or 17. So we were there all night and most of the morning. But it was so much fun.
Marvell Thomas was part of that session.
Yeah, Isaac Hayes was even there.
Yeah,
Craig Brewer, Isaac, all the musicians. We had we had engineers from L.A. that were there dealing with the click track for the film. So there were a lot of people there.
But so John Gary, he and I just instantly hit it off when we met. I just thought, you know, I just instantly vibed with him, thought he was cool. He did a little bit of singing on the first Bo Keys record. You know, it was mostly instrumental record, but there were like kind of a couple little vocal things on there, and he contributed. And after that record, I started hanging out over at Royal all the time. I'd go by there all the time, hang out with Willie Mitchell, and started working there as an assistant engineer. And you'd walk in, and Willie Mitchell would be sitting there with his feet propped up on the desk, drinking vodka, smoking Cools, listening to Clifford Brown. And John Gary would frequently come in and be there, and we just really hit it off. And then we would invite John Gary out to sing with us sometimes. He might have been really the first vocalist we ever really worked with. I remember there's a record label in England called Ace Records, and I think they asked us to back him up at a party. I think that might have been one of the first times we backed up a vocalist was working with John Gary. And we just became friends, and we worked together, but we're friends probably more than we really worked together. And you know, I love John, and when I think about him, what I think about is someone who was a very great, very sensitive artist who was probably dealt some of the hardest things in life of anyone that I've ever known. So it was kind of like, on one hand, just this very, you know, my experience with him, he was a very, very sensitive person, and kind of wore his heart on his sleeve to a pretty great degree when it came to his music and art and writing. And he was also different than a lot of the other acts that were on Stax. He wasn't like it was more of a Northern soul sound. You know, the Mad Lads are like huge in Philly, and they're huge out in East LA with like the whole East LA like lowrider culture. They're way more popular outside of Memphis than they are in Memphis. They were kind of an anomaly on Stax Records. So he was different and very sensitive, but he really got dealt some really difficult things in life. From early on all the way to the end, it's just, you know, I don't want to get into all of it, but, you know, he was, the Mad Lads are going, and he was drafted into the Vietnam War, and he had got dealt a really bad hand over in that conflict. And so his career, you know, he lost like that part of his career, and then he came back and was getting his career back on track and made this record that we'll hear tonight. And then the rug got pulled out from underneath him again, just like Willie was saying, with Stax folding right as this album was coming out. And I remember when I first met him that first day, that was one of the things you and John Gary talked about, was how the missed opportunity with this album we're going to hear tonight, and how great of a record it was, and how if things would have been different and it got the exposure it should have had, things would have turned out differently for you and him both. And I do believe that. So he was a real heavy person, like a real deep, heavy artist.
Scott, it's not often that my guests sort of serve up the talking point that I was hoping we could hit. And so I think that's a great place to stop is when we listen to this record tonight, I hope that people can sort of expand their notion of what style of soul came out of Stax. I think that maybe we don't give enough credit to not only the Mad Lads and John Gary's solo record, but, you know, the Temprees and the Dramatics and Carla and some of these other acts that I would say did something that wasn't necessarily that down home Memphis soul, and kind of, for lack of a better term, were enterprising acts to reach these Memphis tentacles out to other areas. And so I hope that is evident in this listening experience tonight. And I think sweet soul is the term that they use out there for my record collectors that are out there in East LA and out in Oakland that like that style of music.
Coming down the highway, I see hope, yeah, 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 and it's coming down.
You're listening to the last of the 2022 Stereo Sessions featuring John Gary Williams.
Amazing. Some extra special thank yous. Miss Deborah Barnes, you back there? Your son sold me my copy of this record, so I might have your copy. He might have just been holding on to your copy, so if you need your copy back, I got it for you. That being said, we tried to play it last Friday, and it was a little gangly, it was a little scratchy, so thanks to Stax Museum and their Stax Museum of American Soul Music for providing us two brand new copies to play tonight so that everyone can hear it nice and clearly. And thanks to Mempho and Nexair for sponsoring this event throughout the entire series. If you are interested in attending the Mempho Music Fest, you just might win a ticket. We're giving away 2 3-day passes. If you are interested in that, where's Ruth? Is Ruth in the building? Well, Ruth will be in the back. You'll know what she looks like. She will look eager to take your raffle ticket. She will set you up with a way to enter that drawing if you are interested in taking a ride to Mempho Land. It should be fun. I believe it will be amazing, spectacular, fantastic, and any other words that I could pull out of my ass here tonight. How are y'all feeling? How'd y'all enjoy that first half of the record, Mr. Willie Hall, Mr. Scott Bomar?
Well, it took me back. Yeah. John has always, to me, been a Ballard dear. You know, he loves Ballards. And, you know, when I was working with Isaac Hayes all the 35 years, I kind of had my feel of Ballards, you know? I always wanted the up-tempo funk, you know, driving stuff. You know, it gave me a place to go. But hell, we did so many ballads with Isaac, I could go to sleep. But, you know, it was all good.
Scott?
I gotta give Willie Hall, the producer of this record, some credit, a little shout out tonight. I think Willie did a heck of a job producing this record.
Thank you.
I haven't listened to this record since John Gary passed. This is the first time I haven't been able to listen to it.
Yes, I'm Willie, Mr. Hall.
You know, the one thing about producing that I was able to do a few productions. I did one on the Temprees, one on Isaac Hayes, and John Gary, maybe one on Carla back in the day, some other groups, but the Fiestas and Round Robin and a couple other things from the 70s. But what has always amazed me about a producer and a film director as well is deciding exactly what you want to, what the final is, you know, because a lot of times as an artist, producer, or a sideman, when you listen back to stuff that's been put together, parts, you know, deciding, is this the mix I want, or is that lick right? Is the drum beat right? You know, you go through so many indecisions about a song or a track. So, you know, that's why I didn't think I was ever too good at that, so I never did really put my heart in it, you know. But I like the rock and roll because I grew up on the Beatles, Three Dog Night, Rolling Stones, all the British stuff, you know. So I was one of the only black guys in my school with a pair of Beatle boots. And the guys used to tell me, who the fuck you think you are, the Beatles? But if I could have grown my hair, if I could have processed my hair during that time, honest to God, man, I was just that stricken. You know, you can get, even today you can play hopefully two bars of any Beatles song, and I can tell you what it is. That's how into it I was. But that's what's amazing to me about producing, you know. But I wish. But actually, you may hear side two. But the two things that I really co-wrote weren't on the album. One was a single a year or so ago. It does well in Europe, called "Come What May." We're gonna make it. And then the other one was Just Ain't No Love Without You Here. It was never released unless it was on the flip side. I'm not sure.
I will say as a DJ, Come What May is one of my favorite songs to play out at gigs. And I have a copy of it downstairs. Maybe if I can slip away for a second, I might grab it.
That song has a history. That was one of them food stamp songs, you know, when you're... you know, like in my early days when I worked, when I started out with the Barquets in May of 68, when they reformed the group, you know, things were really rough. I mean, you know, they had us, they had the young Barquets, they had us arranged to, we went to etiquette classes and mannerism and all of that, you know, the fork goes on this side, the spoon, you know, they treated us like real stars like they did at Motown. But those were really some days, man. We didn't even have gas fare. The bus would break down, and we didn't have air conditioning in the winter, summer, and no heat in the winter. We used to steal pillows and blankets from the hotels, and sometimes the police would come and get them back. They stop us on the side of the highways. All right, throw up the fucking blankets and pillows, you know? And we'd have to freeze on the way home. Those were some lean days. I think I made, the most I ever made with the Barquets was $75 a week. And that was in 1969. So it was all pot pies. You know, that's what we lived on, pot pies. Yeah.
I don't want to put anyone on the spot, but would anyone from the family want to speak about John Gary, just as he was outside of the studio, or, you know, in the studio? Either way, we have an extra mic right here. I don't know if it's on. Here it is. It's on. Oh, he got another one. All right. I did all that for nothing. Yeah.
Thank you anyway.
Absolutely.
Good afternoon. I know John Gary as my brother. We used to fight, too, all the time. But when you've got family and you can, at the time, I didn't think, I didn't know that my brother was a genius as he is. I remember when they were in high school at Booker T. Washington, and they came home, Warriors out there somewhere, and they came home and they said, man, we got a gig in Florida with the Temptations. I ain't plead, that's what I said, plead. But it happened, and when they went to Florida, at that time, they only had Sidewalk Surf out. That was the first record they recorded. It did all right in Florida. So they didn't have a whole lot of songs in their repertoire. Now, I said they went on the show with the Temptations, right? They come out after they did Sidewalk Surf and a couple other ones. Can y'all tell me what song of the Temptations did they do? Just guess. My Girl. My Girl, right? David Ruffin had a fit. He said, man, what are you all doing on our show, doing our song? My brother John said, well, look, David, we didn't have many songs to do. And we already had this song in our repertoire, so we did it. And that's what happened. But anyway, my brother was a brother that loved deeply. And listen, y'all, I'd be remiss if I didn't introduce the family, if it's okay with you all. First of all, I'd like to introduce my lovely, lovely wife, Jesse Williams. All right. And I'm going to do the ladies first. John's wife, wives. Trina and Linda. All right, my lovely niece sitting right here in front of me, Nikon. All right. And her friend. All right. My other niece sitting behind Nikon, Lisa. Yeah. Now, when I grew up, I had three other brothers. Yep, you all know John is gone, and my oldest brother's gone. But thank God, I got my other brother here, Victor Williams. Yeah. And Roland. Hey. So I'm not going to take up too much of your time, but let me say this. The Mad Lads is carrying on. And we were in California about 2 weeks ago. And most of the people know, I want a girl, and don't have to shop around and all of that. But the songs that these people wanted to hear the most is, when I was down and out, you talked to me and made me see my way. You gave me love when all my friends just left and walked away. Oh, well, it don't take much to make me see I love you so bad. You mean so much to me. That was the one. Yeah. Thank y'all.
Thank you.
And that's Richard, by the way.
Speaking of family, Mr. Hall, while I got you here, if we can preview to what might be Stereo Sessions Season 2, your son, Patrick Hall, is one of Memphis's first important hip-hop artists, Gangsta Pat. And there are several other instances of people who gave in your time period, in your heyday, in your generation. And even before that, I mean, Finest Newborn Senior and Junior and Al Jackson Senior and Junior. And this thing has to keep on kicking down the road. Not just men, and women as well, and all genders. From where you stand right now, from where you sit, you know, where Eddie Floyd's son is Beyonce's tour director, where Isaac Hayes' son is out doing incredible things in music and publishing, how do we continue to push Memphis music to share this as a family and to continue to grow this vision and this and honor this legacy? That's a big question, but it's an important question, and it might shine a light on where we're going with WYXR, where we're going with Crosstown, where we're going with Matt's studio next door, where we're going with Scott's studio at Sam Phillips, where we're going with this Elvis film, where just where we're going. You as a godfather of this thing, how do we push it forward?
Well, I think that Memphis has a vast variety of talent. I mean, it's amazing. And in this generation now, since the 70s, the Aretha Franklin, Ray Charles era, you know, since that era, music has changed tremendously, not only from the sound quality standpoint. You know, we're getting higher highs, better mid-range, and dynamic bass bottoms. So, and the songs have changed. Now, it seems that we as a community, Memphis music, it seems like we're into more of a poetry situation than real music. I mean, when you speak of music, you're speaking of a lot of instrumentation, you know. But now I think, you know, it's a lot of poetry going on now. But I believe that Memphis will come back around. What distinguishes the past from now is, I know from coming on the scene in the late 60s that we had a better composition of distributorship. You know, you could record something, and you were assured of getting it to the stations. You were assured of getting it to the distribution warehouses and getting it to the mom and pop record shops and all of that. You know, you could keep up with it. But at that time, we had a bunch of labels. You know, we had the Stax, the Sun. We had a bunch of them. So there was more of an opportunity to get your record sold. Now everything is on the internet. You know, you can collect quicker and easier, but it's a whole new system. And what we've got to do is, I've learned to just flow with it, because when years ago when Stevie Wonder, I was around him, and they brought in this drum machine, and this guy programmed the drum machine, man, and I put my sticks up. I said, everything is just shifted. So we just got to wait. It may be a decade or two. We just got to wait until that one record or that one group emerges, and that's gonna start a whole nother trend for Memphis. And also, what's more important is we've got to get some investors to come in here and put some money into the recording mechanism of Memphis, you know, because Memphis has this Delta Blues thing, you know, it has never changed, and that's one of the things that Memphis is recognized for, is that Delta, mud on your shoes blues. And so eventually that'll come back. I don't think we can push it. I don't think it can be written. There's a time in history when all these phenomenons occur, and we're just going to have to wait and just soak in what we know to do until that happened, because there's only going to be one superstar every century. And so Memphis is still in the running. You know, we got to hold on, man. Yeah.
Well, thank you for your leadership and your legacy. Give it up for Mr. Willie Hall, everybody. So, Scott, when preparing to work with a John Gary Williams in the 21st century, do you take cues from his previous work, or did you sort of start from scratch? I mean, where does that process take off?
Well, it's a little bit of both. I mean, I was very inspired by this record we're listening to this evening. When the first time I heard it, I was like, why have I not heard this record before? It just blew me away. But and John Gary, he knew what he wanted. You know, when I worked with John, I took a lot of my cues from John, because he had pretty, you know, he had strong ideas about what he wanted. And you just, you know, had to help him realize his vision. I mean, we did collaborate on some things, but it was, you know, we had good collaborations when we wrote together. But for the most part, you know, John Gary would say, hey, I've got this idea. And I wish, you know, I'd gotten to record more of these ideas that he had. I feel fortunate that I did get to do the work with him I did do, but there was more we could have done, and we just didn't get it done. But
didn't you do his last single?
We did. That was the one that you and I worked on together. There's a documentary film that a gentleman named John Hubble has been working on, and he wanted, for part of the documentary, for John Gary to have a recording session. And we recorded two songs for that single, but also, as Willie mentioned earlier, around that same time, John Gary had gotten a bad diagnosis, throat cancer, and he knew that his window to be able to sing was closing. So it was like, kind of like, okay, before I'm not going to be able to sing anymore, I'd like to record. So that was the last session that Willie mentioned that we did together. And it was a very special session for many reasons. For me, it was very special because we put together, you know, to me, in my opinion, one of the greatest rhythm sections of all time, which is Willie, Michael Tolles, James Alexander, and Lester Snell. Just an amazing rhythm section. You know, just the records are endless. Probably half the records in here you guys played on. So that was real special.
Heroes.
Yeah, that was very special to have that group come together and to cut some stuff with John Gary.
Well, I don't want to spoil the end of this record, but there's a song on it that I think is prescient, that I think is phenomenal, that I think is a testament to John Gary's lyricism, but also that I think is a testament that as much as things change, they stay the same, that I think is relevant and prevalent in these times. And I think is worth a listen to anybody in this world. I mean, on one end you have, you know, like a Louis Armstrong, What a Wonderful World. And on the other end, you have the end of this record. And, you know, Stax is known for a lot of things, and one thing that they should be known for is message music. And it's not quite gospel, because you can't say certain things in church. But it is the gospel, because certain things need to be said.
listening to the last of the 2022 Stereo Sessions featuring John Gary Williams.
Where's our other guest? Where's Willie Hall? I could have guessed that one. Well, that's Brother Hall. Down the hall. Well, without him.
Willie did go get a beverage.
We'll have to keep him on a leash. Here he is. There he is. Come on now, because I don't want him to miss his song. He done talked it up 2-3-4 times. We get you right. We drink afterwards. Oh, no, it's fine. You good. Because we're going to wrap this thing up and get people on up out of here. Because y'all won't go home and listen to the record again, right?
That's right.
The whole damn world is going crazy. Again and again and again and again and again and again.
I think he did a good job of with the lyrics.
Yes.
You know, because lyrics in a song are supposed to paint a picture. And I think he did. There's so many lyrics to choose from, you know.
The entire album is a very lyrical album.
That's true.
Beautiful. Not just ballads, but, I mean, in the style of a ballad, but, I mean, you have the you know, Lisa, his daughter, also reminded me that the album begins with I See Hope. So there's two sides to the coin on the record as well. And as I mentioned, I mean, as a DJ, I would DJ at Central Station, and I would have my big old trusty box over there of Memphis singles. And, you know, you have slow songs, which don't necessarily make up most of my set. You have your up-tempo songs, you know, Anita Ward, Ring My Bell. That's going to get people moving. Disco Lady, Johnny Taylor, you know. These things get people moving. Sang and Dance. I think you know something about that.
Sang
Son
and
of
dance.
Shaft. These yeah. sorts of things. But when you want to slow it down just ever so slightly and you hit that mid-tempo, Come What May is one of those records that I think really catches people off guard. Like, who is that? What is that? Why is that? How does that connect to Memphis? Anything else you want to share about that record? Because I went downstairs and started digging for it, and I found it. So
well, like I mentioned, it actually emerged from desperation, hunger. My first wife and I, we were, like I said, I never made any more than $75 a week with the Barquets, and so there was nothing. There was always not enough groceries. There was always not enough money for this and that. And but being young, and we could see a future, like John mentioned, I see hope. You know, we were a young married couple living in the projects, and but for some reason, everything that I was fortunate enough to be in collaboration with started turning into gold. You know, all of the artists at Stax was having this successful run, and I just happened to be the drummer playing on those hit records. So you get this feeling that God is with you and everything is going to be all right and you're doing something worthy. So she and I had hopes of things getting better. And that was my way, because I would do this. I would stay in the studio all night. I mean, Isaac would record from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. So we hardly got a chance to see our families. By the time we got home, it'd be like that old joke where you're sneaking out on your wife and then you get home, you get ready to take your clothes off and get into bed, and she wake up and you act like you just got a, ooh, baby, I was just putting my clothes on, getting ready to go to work. I had no sleep. But it was sort of like that. So when I would come home, ooh, and the sun would be up, Bobby Womack, the daylight catch me up again. But anyway, when I would come home, so I would grab my guitar, I smoked me a joint, grabbed my guitar, and tried to make some sense of it. And I looked around the apartment, and everything was so ghetto-ish, poverty-stricken, impoverished-looking, you know. And so that weed it lifted my spirits. So I came up with the title, Come What May, We're Gonna Make It. Oh, come what may, we can shake it. So I took the... I had put it down on the, you know, and took it to John, and he said, I got it, man. Give me a copy. I got it. So he finished it. So the lyrics are self-explainable, but that a lot of songs are written out of desperation.
One thing that strikes me about the record is the lingo. Best friends throw salt on me. Mm-hmm. I'm like, damn, one of my homeboys wrote this joint. What's going on?
Try to steal it, you away.
It sounds so current. It sounds so real. I don't know. We should just hear it, right? It sounds almost like it sounds like a drum machine. I mean, you.
Oh no! That.
I mean, I know it's a little early for that.
I appreciate that, but that's me. Thank God.
All right.
You know, when you're young like that, I started at Stax when I was 17. So then the rhythm section that was recording all the records were Booker T and the MGs, Al Jackson, Steve Cropper, Duck Dunn, and Booker T Jones. So I had the enthusiasm to, when I'd finished with the Barquets rehearsal and whatever, then I would intentionally stay and try to sneak upstairs to the control room to hear other artists record. So I was, I started sneaking in on the Booker T and the MG's record. So they taught us. James Alexander already had the knowledge, studio knowledge, because before the plane crash, the Barquets rhythm section, they were constantly in the studio.
Yeah.
So they were taught by, see, there's an art to recording. Like even today, at my age, I'd prefer being in the studio for 12 or 15 hours rather than doing a live gig, because in the studio you can make things perfect. You can manicure. They got this thing, what they call now, I was in the studio some months ago with David Porter, and I'm working with a click track, a metronome. I learned that with Isaac Hayes during Shaft. So I'm playing with the click track, and I'm human. The click track is not, so it's not gonna waver. They say it's not gonna waver. But humans waver, sometimes I get a little ahead of the beat, sometimes I fall behind it. But for the greater percentage of two bars, I'm pretty much on top of it. So in the studio, they got this thing where they said, I said, I missed a beat right there, I was a little behind. They said, well, don't worry about it, we're gonna fly the first two bars over there. So in other words, they can make everything perfect. They can take one part from the intro and put it in the verse and take, to make the drums consistently perfect. So I'd rather work in the studio than on stage.
Well, let's hear it. Come with me. Let's hear it.
Shake, but love is made of a giving.
not bad for a 1970s record.
Yeah. I've got. Can I ask a question or two? Who's playing guitar on that record?
Believe it or not, you ain't gonna believe this. I played. I swear it sounds like brag, but it's the truth. The fuzz part.
That's you?
That's me.
Oh, man. Okay.
But Michael Toews played guitar, and Marvell Thomas, and I think Earl Thomas on bass guitar.
So someone asked me earlier who the engineer was on the album, and I thought maybe Henry Bush or William Brown, but who?
Ooh, I have no idea. If we could turn that poster around, we could read it.
Right.
But
and I have one more question. No idea. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, everybody.
I have one more question, Willie. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm taking your Q&A away.
No, we in it together.
So was this single, was the record done all at the same time and the single, or was it kind of like spaced out when you guys recorded it?
John got the single put out first, actually before the album.
Was it the same session or different sessions?
Oh, no. Come What May and Just Ain't No Love Without You Here. That to me, that's the best song. I love the sound. John and a producer named Tom Nixon, who used to produce the Tim Prees, he and Josephine Bridges had a label called We Produce, and they did all the stuff on the Tim Prees. John and Tom Nixon went to Philadelphia and used the same rhythm section that did all of the Teddy Pendergrass, that did the Stylistics. It's the same group of musicians at the same studio. So they went to Philly and used that Philly International Band and string players. So I don't know where they got the money from. I guess John was allotted, a budget to put out a single. That's the only way it could have been done, unless he put up his own money. But he was signed to the Stax label, and they did actually, in order for that product to come back finished, those people in Philadelphia had to be paid. So either it came out of John's artist budget, production budget. But yeah.
I wanted to shout out, one, just my history and my journey to being here. Thank y'all so much for staying a little longer. We're doing a little extra than what we typically do. This is the last stereo sessions of the season, so I wanted to make sure that it was super special. Y'all still good? Y'all good to stay here? I promise, if you're just sticking around to see if you can win Minfo tickets, I appreciate you, but we're going to get there. My elder cousin, Andrew Love, was, after his passing, it was the reason, he was a part of Memphis Horns, the reason I started collecting records and started researching Memphis music. Yeah, he was the reason that I woke up in my dorm room one day and said, I need to do more to honor this legacy, honor this history. It's dope to look across and see my brother, one of my best friends from high school, Josh, is one of John Gary's young cousins. And so it's a reminder of why we do this and why we hold up these legacies and honor our ancestors, honor those that we can have these conversations with. It's urgent to me to be able to hold this oral history in regard. Thank you for, again, all of our sponsors that made this possible. Thank you to Via Productions and Billy Worley, who are gonna make sure that we can capture this on film and through audio and be able to share this as a teaching tool and as a learning tool and as entertainment, education for people to push this forward. Thank you for the family for being here one more again. Yeah. I appreciate y'all. Thank you to you. If you've been to any one of our stereo sessions this series, go out and tell somebody about it. Say next year that you have to support WYXR in this effort. Come to any of our events that we'll be having between now and then. We'll be thinking up some new amazing things to do. There's a bucket right there where you can donate if you want to support our ability and our capacity to be able to continue to do work like this. And you can, of course, listen with your radios, listen with your phones by downloading our app, that's WYXR Radio, or by going online and going to WYXR.org, or a litany of ways that you can listen to WYXR. I appreciate you for doing that. Thank you, Minfo and NextAir, and all of our sponsors again. Support for WYXR, including our 2024 Stereo Session series, comes from Bill Street Caravan. Long-running roots music radio show, Bill Street Caravan is syndicated globally with outlets in Canada, the UK, Australia, and more. Produced steps away from WYXR, right here in Memphis. Co-hosted by me, Jarrett J.B. Boyd.
with Memphis Music Maven and Soulsville Foundation CEO Pat Mitchell Work. Each episode brings fans near and far up close to the Bluff City's live music scene. Broadcasted every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. right here on WYXR. More information at BillStreetCaravan.com.
Support for WYXR, including our 2024 stereo sessions, comes from VIA Productions. Founded in 2003, VIA specializes in audience engagement, creating all types of video and audio content ranging from animation to documentaries. More information on how VIA can bring your brand story to life at viaproductions.co.
Programming supported by Girl from the North Country, playing October 8th through the 13th at the Orpheum Theater. This new musical, written and directed by Connor McPherson, reimagines the songs of Bob Dylan. More information at orpheum-memphis.com.
Sweet love, and don't you pass.